I want to start in Matthew 16 this morning. I'm going to begin there in verse 13. Let me get it pulled up here. Matthew 16, beginning in verse 13. It says, "When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, 'Who do people say the Son of Man is?' They replied, 'Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others, Jeremiah or one of the prophets.' 'But what about you?' he asked. 'Who do you say I am?' Simon Peter answered, 'You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God.'" Now, this question that he's asking them there certainly seems like a simple question. At least I feel like it seems simple. But I want to look at that question this morning because it's an important question. It has eternal consequences. It has a major impact on our lives today. And I want to look a little bit first at the first part of this conversation between Jesus and his disciples. The first thing he asked, of course, was, "Who do people say the Son of Man is? Who do others think?" He got some various responses from the disciples. Some said that Jesus was actually John the Baptist. This is still in Matthew, back a couple of chapters to chapter 14 and in verse 1. It says, "At the time, Herod the Tetrarch heard the reports about Jesus, and he said to his attendants, 'This is John the Baptist. He is risen from the dead. That is why miraculous powers are at work in him.'" Now, is this just an answer he gave? Is this something he really believed? No, don't think so. But I mean, you know, he heard of his miraculous powers, and just like you or I do, when we're faced with something, we've got to find a way to justify it or give some kind of answer for it. Maybe this was just the answer that he gave. If we go back even further in Matthew, this time I'm in chapter 8, you know, we find the disciples kind of asking the same question. This is with the storm. "So then he got into the boat, and his disciples followed him. Suddenly a furious storm came up on the lake, so that the waves swept over the boat, but Jesus was sleeping. The disciples went and woke him, saying, 'Lord, save us, we're going to drown.' He replied, 'You have little faith, why are you so afraid?' Then he got up and rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm." This is the part I'm looking at here. "The men were amazed and asked, 'What kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him.'" Mark 4 records them asking, "Who is this?" So you know what? They're asking these kind of questions too. Maybe not in the exact same context, but similarly. Another answer that's given is Elijah or Jeremiah or one of the prophets. That answer basically saying a teacher sent from God. In John chapter 3, we learn about Nicodemus. He's a Pharisee. He's a member of the Jewish ruling council. In verse 2, he came to Jesus at night and said, "Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher who has come from God, for no one could perform the signs you are doing if God were not with him." You know, people took notice of the teaching ability of Jesus. It was something that stood out. There was just something special, something different about the way Jesus could connect with others and could teach others. At the end of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 7, I don't have this up on the board, but we're told that the crowds were amazed at his teaching because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. So we see the answers given to Jesus. That's kind of what I wanted to look at right there. Well, the answers given to Jesus in Matthew 16. But where does that leave us today? What if this question, the same question, was asked today? Who do others say that Jesus is? I'm sure some would say that he was a great moral teacher. Some may say he was an important teacher and a miracle worker in the first century. Others may give you a little bit more of a historical perspective, saying he was a man who led a group of revolutionary types and ended up being executed. You know, I know some skeptics. I'm sure you know some skeptics. There's some folks that may say, well, all those stories of his resurrection, his disciples, they kind of came up with that because they didn't like the way the real story turned out. I'm sure others would talk about his birth with as much focus as we put on the holiday and things like that. I mean, there's multiple ways that the question can be answered. What would others say about Jesus? But the next question is more important. Not who do others say I am. Who do you say I am? Who do I say that he is? Who do you say that he is? And again, when you think of that question just on the surface, it sounds simple. It just really does. We could list titles. We could say he's the Son of God. He's the Lamb of God. He's the sacrifice for the sins of the world. The Alpha and Omega. King of Israel. Lord of Lords. King of Kings. Son of Man. I could go on. We could review all of those things that are listed in our Bibles. And that kind of gives an answer to that question. But not really. We could also rattle off statistics about him. We could say that he was born in Bethlehem. He was visited by shepherds and kings at his birth. He was raised as the son of a carpenter, left at the temple at age 12, baptized by John the Baptist, betrayed, arrested, tried, and executed by crucifixion. Raised the third day, seen by his disciples, ascended to heaven, and promised to return and take us home. Maybe that does answer the question, but again, not really. I think the real question, and maybe we just state it a little differently to think about it in this way, is do we really know who Jesus is? Do we recognize, do we realize the true identity of Jesus? With that, it opens up other questions, like, for example, do our lives match what we profess, what we believe? You know, when we profess to know who Jesus is, the life we live has to match up with the words we speak. Otherwise, we send the wrong message. I'll give you an example. Suppose I stand up here and say that I love my wife and my son. That's probably not something I have to tell you. I would hope you gain that from the many stories I share about them. But say I say it and you think, okay, that's a good thing. That's what you're supposed to do. But if you find out that supposedly, I don't treat my wife like I should. I don't treat my son like I should. I'm not behaving or acting in the way a loving husband and father should. Supposedly, theoretically, if that were to happen, my life isn't matching up with what I'm professing, with what I'm saying. I'm just paying lip service. That same concept goes for our lives as Christians today. If we tell our family, if we tell our friends, if we stand up on the highest mountain and shout to the whole world that we know who Jesus is and we love Jesus, but then we live our lives in a manner that doesn't match up with that, we're just paying lip service. I want to head over to Acts 26. I've got several different, several different passages from there this morning. I want to look at what it really means to know who Jesus is. Less an answer to the question, but more the implications of the knowledge for the life we live today. This in Acts 26, for some background, this is a fairly larger passage here. Paul has been imprisoned in Caesarea. Governor Festus has been lobbied by the Jews to bring Paul back to Jerusalem for trial. He appealed to Caesar. And Festus had an issue, if you remember this, didn't he? He wasn't quite sure on what charge to bring this with. So he consults King Agrippa, who wants to hear Paul himself. And this is where we'll start. In Acts 26 and chapter 12. Excuse me. It says, on one of these journeys I was going to Damascus with the authority and commission of the chief priests. About noon, King Agrippa, as I was on the road, I saw a light from heaven, brighter than the sun, blazing around me and my companions. We all fell to the ground, and I heard a voice saying to me in Aramaic, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? It is hard for you to kick against the goads. Then I asked, Who are you, Lord? I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting, the Lord replied. Now get up and stand on your feet. I have appeared to you to appoint you as a servant and as a witness of what you have seen and will see of me. I will rescue you from your own people and from the Gentiles. I am sending you to them to open their eyes and turn them from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God so that they may receive forgiveness of sins and a place among those who are sanctified by faith in me. Now this sounds very familiar, doesn't it? Right? This is him telling the account of his conversion. It's the context of this that I think we can look better at the question this morning. We can see the effect on Paul's life due to that realization, due to knowing who Jesus really was. And we can see some of the same effects in our lives today. We can see from this that Jesus changes our direction. That's the first thing I want to notice today. You know, I think Paul is someone we can admire. If you look back, he was a guy that did everything all out, all in, 110%, however you want to describe it along those lines. We're still in Acts 26. I want to go back a bit. This is just to verse 4. Again, this is Paul still talking there. He's talking to Agrippa and Festus. He says, The Jewish people all know the way I have lived ever since I was a child, from the beginning of my life in my own country and also in Jerusalem. They have known me for a long time and can testify, if they are willing, that I conform to the strictest sect of our religion, living as a Pharisee. And now it is because of my hope in what God has promised our ancestors that I am on trial today. This is the promise our 12 tribes are hoping to see fulfilled as they earnestly serve God day and night. King Agrippa, it is because of this hope that these Jews are accusing me. Why should any of you consider it incredible that God raises the dead? I too was convinced that I ought to do all that was possible to oppose the name of Jesus of Nazareth. And that is just what I did in Jerusalem. On the authority of the chief priests, I put many of the Lord's people in prison. And when they were put to death, I cast my vote against them. Many a time I went from one synagogue to another to have them punished. And I tried to force them to blaspheme. I was so obsessed with persecuting them that I even hunted them down in foreign cities. I mean, that's basically what he's saying. He's saying, you can ask around. I was a bad guy. You can ask the Jews. They'll tell you that. He tells them he did everything he could to stop this, the following of this Jesus of Nazareth. He was so good at it, he practically took the show on the road. I mean, that's what he's telling them here. He was going all in, full speed, 110%. I can think of 100 different metaphors to say that, to persecute Christians. But what changed? He had his experience on the road to Damascus. He came to realize who Jesus truly was. And he didn't slow down. He kept going 110%. That'll be the one I overuse this morning. But in a different direction. He went from a strong force opposing Christianity to a strong force spreading Christianity. We can do the same thing. I don't think any of us that I'm looking out here today did anything like he was doing before, but Jesus has the power to do that for us today. When we see him for who he really is, it can completely change the direction in which we live our lives. Understanding who he is helps us to stop living for ourselves and instead begin living for him. It leads us to stop serving things like finances or careers or politics and instead serve him and serve others. That's why our actions must match up with the words we speak. That's because Jesus has that power to change that direction. And people need to see that in the lives of changed people. We can also see from this that knowing the identity of Jesus changes our perspective in the area of evangelism. Think about Paul here. Paul is appearing before Agrippa. Because Agrippa wanted him to, right? He had appealed to Caesar. He didn't really have to present a case here. I mean, Agrippa wanted to hear him, so he was going to be before him, but did Paul really have to do anything? No. No, he had appealed to Caesar. So why is he talking to these guys? Why is he laying out the story of his changed life? It's because there's an opportunity here. Still in Acts 26, this time I want to go to verse 28. After all this talk, and then Agrippa said to Paul, "Do you think that in such a short time you can persuade me to be a Christian?" Paul replied, "Short time or long, I pray to God that not only you, but all who are listening to me today may become what I am, except for these chains." He's in front of some powerful people. He's in front of a king and a governor, and he's using that opportunity to spread the word of God. That's another benefit of realizing the true identity of Jesus. It motivates us to do everything we can in every situation to teach others about him. I don't think anybody would deny that we live in a world today that needs Jesus, desperately needs Jesus. It seems like everybody's looking for something. Whether they find it on television or find it at a bookstore or find it in an online article, everybody's looking for that something that's going to ground them, that's going to give them direction in life. And I almost, you almost want to say, I know the secret. Because we do. Knowing Jesus gives us that direction that we need in our lives. It can give all of those in the world needing direction in their lives exactly what they are looking for. I've said 100 times that I don't have to tell you that we lead busy lives. We do. We all do. But we just get bogged down in things. And I think sometimes we get so bogged down in other things that maybe we don't do the best job of telling others about Jesus. Paul leads by example. The example here I want to reference is in 1 Corinthians 2, beginning there in verse 1. It says, "And so it was with me, brothers and sisters. When I came to you, I did not come with eloquence or human wisdom as I proclaimed to you the testimony about God. For I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified." That's what happened at Paul's conversion. He was confronted with the true identity of Jesus. That's what we've got to do. We've got to introduce people to Him. We've got to let people see Him in us. We also see that realizing the true identity of Jesus can change our allegiance. It can change our perspective of obedience. You know, one of the titles, of course, we use for Jesus is Lord. My good buddy Webster tells me if you define Lord, it's someone or something having power, authority, or influence, a master or ruler. Think about master in all of that. When we think of Jesus as a master, it implies ownership, doesn't it? Or at least the word master implies ownership. And in the case of Jesus, that's exactly what it should imply. He owns us. He should own us. And if we think about it in that way, it should help us to have a completely different perspective on obedience. I want to look again in Acts 26. This time I'm in verse 19. Short verse. It says, "So then, King Agrippa, I was not disobedient to the vision from heaven." That's the part of understanding just exactly who Jesus is. King of kings, Lord of lords, understanding His position over us. It helps us to not only obey Him, but to make sure our obedience is to Him and Him alone. We follow Him and we obey Him as our master, not because we think we can earn our way to heaven, but because we understand our position as it relates to Him. We understand the relationship that we are to have with the King of Kings. You know, the Pharisees at the time of Jesus were focused on the law of Moses, intently focused on obedience to the law of Moses. And they believed that keeping that law is what made them God's people. But we see Jesus at odds with them. Why? Because their motives were in the wrong place, weren't they? Yes. Their motives were wrong. If we see Jesus for who He is, who He truly is, if we come to know Him as we should know Him, we don't have to worry about motive. We can let everything else fall into place if we simply follow Him first and foremost as He has instructed us. We know who He is. We will gladly submit in obedient faith to His authority because of who exactly He is and what He has done for us. Who do you say I am? Think about that question this morning. Think about Jesus asking that question. Think about what you'd say to Him in reply, but mainly think about what the implications of that answer are. We're going to offer an invitation this morning. If you know who Jesus is, but if you haven't submitted to His authority, there is no time like today. Maybe if you're in need of prayer, if there's any way we can help, please come while we stand and while we sing.